So maybe you have to follow the digitalization whether you want it or not.
If you're not jumping now on this train, I think you're just going to simply be left behind. I think now really investing into finding out what are your digital needs as an organization, what do you need to do, what are your next steps, I think is super important for organizations to keep creating impact.
I don't know if it's a good necessity or a bad necessity, but I think that definitely we need to adapt, and maybe it will be good to start maybe some new ideas and projects in fully digital way.
There's general agreement amongst EU3 digital partners and third sector leaders that digitalization is unavoidable. So with this pressure, it's important to see through this change with a mind to social impacts and ethical responsibilities. This is at the heart of all the EU3 digital outputs, including the training in Croatia.
Hello, my name is Senata Majic. I come from Croatia, from the city of Osijek, and I'm the president of the organization Generator that promotes critical thinking and contemporary culture and arts. I wanted to get more digital. I call myself digital idiot. But really to learn some new tools, and even what was really interesting in this training, a new way of thinking about digitalization. To even question this digitalization, which is so omnipresent and so natural to happen, but I never thought about how it can be even non-ethical.
I think digitalization, it's a common problem for every institution and every person, and it just happens there. So it was not a process that people discuss or adapt, and there is no this idea of planning in the long term, okay, what we want to do.
That was Victor, an EU3 digital fellow and trainer. With digitalization often happening in an ad hoc and piecemeal way, it's all too easy to lose sight of the basics.
I'm David Jakovkis for social organizations. Their public image is extremely important. They depend a lot on volunteers and on donations, and they have to project an image of social responsibility. They have to project an image of behaving in all aspects of their activity in ways that are aligned with their social mission. Otherwise, people will not trust them. And trust is something that's very difficult to build. It takes a long time and it's very easy to lose it.
One of the basics is data security.
I'm Admar Giar. I'm from University of Porto. A very important concern about these kind of organizations, they need to process a lot of data from the beneficiaries, so you need to protect it. Even just sending emails the wrong way using tools that are not probably safe, it can be a serious problem. And at the time we know it is a problem, it is late. So we need to prevent that.
I think it's a responsibility of the third sector organizations to take care of this data, but they are normally not the best informed people about these things. I suspect that the problem with social institutions, the third sector, it's budget. It will be really hard to discuss with someone of the third sector and saying, okay, you should pay for things that you can get apparently free.
Victor is concerned that choices of tools and platforms can come with hidden costs that can in some cases work against social mission.
What we are insisting a lot is this free is not really free. You exchange your data, the data of the people you are working with these platforms. And this information is then sold to other companies. And that's a problem because you have this bubble effect that you just receive news about what interests you. And the thing is, the world is not your bubble. The world is a bigger thing. You need to know about what happens in other places. It's not only the algorithms working there, but profiling plays a big role on that. That starts from the data you have, Google have on your Facebook. and especially for the third sector, are working with vulnerable people or people that have some issues somehow. And exposing the people with these vulnerabilities, it's really dangerous.
We should be questioning whether the providers that we pay are aligned with the values that we want to defend. I think the best way is trying to bring it down to who is paying for the service, who owns the data, both in the legal sense and in the practical sense, who has access to it, whether it's good for the environment, it's good for the communities, it respects the labor rights of workers, etc., etc. And we are not used to thinking about digital services from this point of view, and we should. And one of the examples that we used when talking about providers, would you like to have the logo of your organization on their website? If you wouldn't, then maybe you need to think about whether this provider is the right one for you.
It's not easy, but it's doable. So there are small cooperatives or groups or hosting providers and these things that are working with great prices, but also socially with principles that they want to respect. They take into account ecology, the rights of the workers. This is the people we want to work with.
The other line of reasoning is helping the organizations take ownership of the tools that they are using. Because very often we are using technologies over which we have zero control. We have no say on whether accessibility is being taken into account, the roadmap for future developments. We depend on the vendor, on the owner of the technology.
Twitter is a good example for that. Right now, Elon Musk buy Twitter, and he is changing the roadmap. We have some issues with Twitter about privacy and how they manage the data and so on. But since Elon Musk is there, we have really bad work conditions. So if you don't own the platform, someone else does, some group of investors or some multimillionaire or whatever, the roadmap will be out of your hand. And the problem now that a lot of organizations will have is, okay, we need to go out of Twitter, but actually we have a lot of data in Twitter, so we are locked in. And what we are saying is, wouldn't it be better if we just directly from the beginning own the platform?
There are alternatives, and you can look for help. You can use software in ways that are more aligned with your social mission.
Yeah, we are talking about pragmatic ethics somehow. So, okay, you have some principles and it's really good. On the other hand, you have to work to deliver something. Normally, in digital tools, you have to choose either one or the other, and that's really bad. And what we are insisting is, no, you can find points where both work together in the same direction.
There are lots of platforms and products, most of them based on free and open source software, where the community of persons and organizations who are using that piece of software get to decide.
Sometimes this way is a little bit longer, because it needs you to change your mind, it needs some change on the organization, it needs some training, it may need some cost and so on, but it's a better way in the long term.
We often put the cart in front of the horse, and instead of looking at what you need and then seeing which programs can cover that need, we see a very cool program or a very cool feature and say, hey, we should be using that. And if you didn't really need it, you end up having a program that you didn't have before, so you need to maintain it and maybe pay for it, or have training in your organization so that everyone knows how to use it. You should think about it the other way around. You should analyze what you need and then try to find the right tools to help you with that. For any need that you might have, there are hundreds of programs and services that can potentially cover it. So which one do you choose? If you're not a technically oriented organization, or you don't have in-house knowledge about these technologies, it's very, very difficult and time-consuming. I think the best way is to ask around other organizations that might have been in the same place that you are a while ago and see what they are doing, what they are using, which were the main obstacles, because you can learn a lot from other people's mistakes. And the other one is finding a technically oriented organization that can help you.
In Sonata's work, she's really contemplated what going digital means for everyone.
It's much wider than digital tools. It's thinking about digital transitions of whole organizations, of our society, digital impact to the society. There is a group of people, old people, who feel injustice by this digital transformation of the society because they are excluded from it. The technology, it's the progress, and we have to follow it. And as older you get, it's hard to follow it. And also, we are working with marginalized youth. When we talk about youth, we usually say they are very digitalized and they know a lot about technology, and we have to follow youth. But in our region, we meet a youth that is not so digitalized, and they are even excluded because they do not follow those trends.
So beneficiaries need to be considered as well as staff and volunteers. Sonata has had experience of trying to introduce digital tools into her organisation's work. Here she reflects that digital isn't always the answer.
So we had a project mobile team with three volunteers. We had to go into the local rural communities, and here we had this survey on the tablet and the other one was written. And at the beginning we thought everybody will use this tablet, but no one did. Even the volunteers who could fill this tablet finally rejected it and then used the paper survey, because I don't know why, when talking with a beneficiary, it was easier for them in this real contact to fill in written form, to do it slowly, maybe even to gain trust, not doing this digitally, because everybody would ask, what are you writing? What is this? What? So finally we did all form in a paper. So this is one real life example how sometimes digitalization makes barrier between people, in fact, especially in real contact.